argument is Ryder versus Astru. Mr. Duncan?
Dana Duncan appears on behalf of the petitioner Francis L. Ryder. Ms. Ryder has alleged numerous errors by the administrative law judge in this particular case. The first being that Ms. Ryder submitted the medical of opinion of a treating source, which if followed would have led to a finding of disabled. She also finds fault with the ALJ's determination as to credibility. And third, that Ms. Ryder established a presumption that she met a listing, but in response, the ALJ's decision only indicates a boilerplate statement that the listings were considered and rejected.
Can you identify what objective medical evidence supported the claim of back pain?
Well, it's hard to use objective evidence to establish a subjective symptom, which is pain. Pain to me is going to be very different than it could be to somebody else who's had pain. As my wife indicates, pain to her is much different than to me after having three children. So it's very subjective. The only thing you can do, Your Honor, is to examine the record, look at things such as does the claimant have atrophy in muscles? Does the claimant have crepitus in the knees? Does the claimant have an abnormal gait? Those types of things. In this particular case, we have a lot of leg pain, and that is established by the treating source who outlined in using a standardized grading system the level of her osteoarthritis in the knees and his ultimate recommendation for knee replacement surgery, which she would have undertaken in 2006 had she had medical treatment available.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions, because although the record seems to indicate a degenerative knee condition that ultimately was disabling, is there evidence that the condition had reached that level of impairment as of December 2006?
Well,
when her insured status, expired.
Correct. And that goes to the doctor's opinion. The doctor's opinion, Judge, was before the expiration of her insured status, at least as far as his finding. His finding that she had, let's see here, that she had x-rays of both knees showed calcification on the superior aspect of the patella, stage 3 patelloformal osteoarthritis in the right knee, stage 2 medial narrowing of the left knee, stage 2 medial narrowing at stage 1 patelloformal disease that's in the record 224. And 225, those findings predated the date of last insured. Ultimately, his decision was that she needed to have that knee replacement surgery in order to resolve that issue.
Mr. Duncan, I want to make sure I'm reading your brief correctly. Does your client's bouts with depression have any role to play in the position you're taking on appeal?
It might ultimately, Judge, but there's so much other evidence available that upon which benefits could be and should be granted that issue never even needed to be addressed. Just the sheer fact that we have a treating source statement that clearly indicates that she meets the listing not on just one point, but on multiple points. She can't work full-time. She can't... She's going to be absent for more time than generally allowed.
Is the legs the problem, particularly the right knee?
That is the primary issue, Judge.
Well, what about her lower back pain? Isn't that as primary as the legs?
Low back pain can be, but primarily the doctor's opinion, Dr. Craig,
yeah,
is an is a orthopod who dealt primarily with her knee. And it could very well have been that the rest of these issues, the depression, the back pain, could have been better developed, but need not even reach those just by looking at the specific issue of his opinion in regards to the knee and that issue alone. Now, in addition to the issue about the back is the issue of credibility. Now, obviously, the judge does make some boilerplate statements as far as credibility in this case as well, but he does provide some detail. Now, we have different issues. One is where the judge provides boilerplate and nothing else. The other, that the judge provides a detailed assessment. In this, the judge made some attempt to provide some assessment, but ultimately that assessment relies on facts that are somewhat suspect. He indicates that she can do, or that the claimant's overall functioning is inconsistent with the finding of disability. He then proceeds to mention that she's independent in her personal care and her wide range of household chores, which she shares with her daughter-in-law. He then points out that she can, or she rides to the appointments with her ill husband and reminds him of his medication. She endured an 18-hour drive across country, and she enjoyed watching her grandchildren. Her daughter-in-law testified in significant detail as to the level of her functioning, pointing out that she helps set the table. She has to sit down and have the laundry brought to her when she does it, that she goes to the grocery store, she takes her stuff, puts it in the cart, and then goes and sits down and waits for her daughter to finish her grocery shopping. And the idea that being able to drive across country without developing that is a little bit disingenuous. We don't know whether that 18-hour drive was conducted over 9 days or a day.
Was she driving or was she a passenger?
I'm sure in this particular case she was a passenger.
She's a passenger. Husband. So she was sitting for 18 hours. But
and she very well could have been lying in the back seat for all we know.
Did the ALJ ever, he mentioned the fact that she weighed 206 pounds and is 5'1". Did he ever discuss the? Isn't there some point at which obesity is itself an aggravating factor? I mean,
correct, Judge. And when we get to the third point about the listing, the Social Security ruling specifically indicates that when obesity is factored in with a listing for osteoarthritis in the knee under 1.02A, you're supposed to consider obesity, and in fact, the requirements for a listing level impairment at step 3 are less because obesity adds to the condition and makes it much worse and more severe and was never addressed. I will reserve my remainder for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Duncan. Mr. Cohen?
May it please the Court, Russell Cohen on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. In order to receive benefits, Ms. Ryder had to show that she was disabled between July 2002, the date she alleged she became disabled, and December 2006, her date that she was last insured for benefits.
Could I just start you out this way? Wasn't the opinion of Dr. Cragg, her treating physician, consistent with the medical evidence of record, and shouldn't it have been entitled to controlling or at least substantial weight?
I don't believe that it was consistent with the medical evidence in the relevant period, which showed that she had...
When did he recommend her getting a knee replacement?
He said that she was headed for a knee replacement.
And when?
Yes. In July 2006, mm-hmm. And I don't have the date, but again in 2007.
Okay, well, but July 2006 mm-hmm. is within the period. I don't understand how a woman 5'1", weighs 200-plus pounds and has a bad knee. How could she possibly work? How does someone with that degree of obesity get around?
Not only get around, but the ALJ found that she could do her past work, which was based on the vocational expert's opinion for a person who could climb stairs and ladders frequently. What evidence in this record supports the finding that this woman could climb stairs and ladders frequently? What ladder would hold her?
I don't believe that there's any evidence about specifically about climbing ladders, but there
is.
Oh,
yes, there was. That was what the vocational expert's opinion was relied on, that she could do her past work and that it was for a person who could climb stairs and ladders frequently.
Oh, I apologize. I was referring to the medical records. I realized that was in the hypothetical question. However, there were...
Want to defend that?
The ability to climb ladders frequently? Yes.
5 foot one, 206 pounds.
I am not a vocational expert, so I can't say a person with those dimensions.
Well, how about some common sense? Or is that not permitted to lawyers for the Social Security Administration?
I don't know how many...
You're agnostic. Okay.
I do know, however, that over the years, during the relevant period, there were a large number of occasions where she had mild or no findings with regard to her knee. She was able to walk perfectly fine. She did not use any sort of ambulatory aid, ending in January 2002, at least from the record.
Why did the doctor think she needed a knee replacement then?
Based on
She's
the finding,
walking fine. What do you need a knee replacement for?
Based on his findings that day, that is what he concluded.
Well, did the administrative law judge think he was wrong and she doesn't need a knee replacement?
The ALJ did not address whether she needed a knee replacement.
Was the only evidence that she needs a knee replacement?
That from Dr. Craig? I believe so, yes.
That's very evidence.
To begin, I think the wording...
It's a simple question, right? Is there contrary evidence?
There is not, but it assumes that that is what
I don't know what the but is about. All right, there's no contrary evidence. So one doctor... So, I mean, to a layperson, someone who has a knee problem and has this terrible obesity needs something. And he said she needs a new knee. And there's no contrary evidence. Doesn't that require some discussion by the administrative law judge?
I believe that what Dr. Craig was saying was that she was headed towards a knee replacement, not that she needed a knee replacement immediately. During her last appointment, and this is after the date last insured.
Well, what exactly did the administrative law judge say about the knee and about Dr. Craig's testimony?
With regard to the knee, the ALJ discussed a multitude of evidence over the years regarding her treatment for osteoarthritis, her knee, both before and after her alleged onset of disability date. With regard to Dr. Craig's opinion, he specifically said that it was...
very strange. What he says is, he recognizes that Dr. Craig has recommended right knee replacement. However, the claimant has yet to undergo the procedure.
Right.
Well, what does that mean?
In isolation, I don't think it's particularly informative, but he follows by saying that she managed with conservative care.
Fairly well with conservative management.
Yes, which is well supported in the record over the years.
You know, another problem here is that the ALJ found that her lower back pain wasn't substantiated by objective medical evidence. So I take it that the ALJ doesn't believe that the CT scan that showed degenerative disc disease is objective medical evidence. That's the first time I think I've ever seen that, that a CT scan that actually shows it won't substantiate her lower back pain. That's really very odd.
If the assumption is that it's connected to Dr. Craig's opinion.
No, this is the lower back pain.
Certainly.
And the CT scan.
The ALJ did mention evidence which is contrary, however.
No, what the ALJ says found was that her lower back pain wasn't substantiated by objective medical evidence. And what I'm saying to you is, do you believe that a CT scan that shows degenerative disc disease, oh, it's like Peter Pepper, supports the ALJ's finding?
I believe that objective medical evidence goes beyond diagnostic scans and also includes examination findings.
I see.
And they're limited with respect to her back pain over the years, and her own representations about it to Dr. Carlson are contrary. When she went to Dr. Carlson, who was a state agency examiner, she said that she was not receiving treatment for it.
Is he the oncologist? Let's see. No, Baumblatt is the oncologist. What was Dr. Carlson? He certainly isn't an orthopod. I can't remember. Can you remember what Dr. Carlson is?
I couldn't say with absolute accuracy.
Yeah. Could you guess?
I could guess that he was an internist, but I could be wrong.
I think you're right. He was an internist. Do you go to internists for your orthopedic problems?
I don't have orthopedic problems.
Well, do you think you will in the future if you ever should? Is that who you'll visit?
I think I would first visit my family physician, which is precisely what she did with her problems for the vast majority of this time.
Well, most people with a modicum of good sense go to an orthopod when they have orthopedic problems, but good luck with your family physician.
Why did he say in 2006 she reported that she enjoyed watching her grandchildren?
I think that the implication there is that it takes energy and an ability to move to be able to watch grandchildren. And that this ran counter to her statements that she had extreme limitations in her abilities.
Can I tell you the difference between your brief and the last brief? You crafted a remarkably fine brief and a remarkably reasoned explanation for the ALJ's ruling. But no persuasive brief by you can substitute for this ALJ opinion.
Thank you. I would like to finally address the listings arguments that seeing that I have time, if there are no further questions.
Why did the district judge fail? I mean, did the administrative law judge discuss Dr. Carlson's opinions?
Yes. He discussed them on page 17 and 18.
17 and 18 of what?
17 and 18 of the administrative record.
What? That's not what's in the appendix. I don't understand.
It would be page 7 and 8. of the ALJ's decision. Beginning at the bottom of page 7.
Okay. But she doesn't say any, or he, whoever it is, he, I mean. Administrative law doesn't say anything about. Okay, it says in the next paragraph on page 8, it says Dr. Carlson opined that claimant would have difficulty with kneeling, squatting, and prolonged standing or walking. Now, did the ALJ accept that?
The ALJ did find that she could stand or walk for 6 hours in an 8-hour workday.
Was that consistent with Carlson's opinion?
It depends on what prolonged means. I believe that it could mean up to 6 hours in an 8-hour workday, given customary breaks.
But Carlson said she'd have difficulty with prolonged standing or walking. Did the administrative law judge credit that, or?
I don't believe the administrative law judge specifically addressed that.
Well, isn't that a hole in the administrative law judge's? That certainly reinforces Craig's evidence.
However, it does not necessarily mean, I believe, that.
Why didn't he discuss it and say, well, Dr. Carlson says she'd have trouble with prolonged walking, but I don't agree? Why didn't he say that?
I don't know. I assume that he believed it to be consistent with the residual functional capacity.
No, it's not consistent. Because if she can't do prolonged standing or walking, how can she work a full day doing these jobs which require walking? Right?
Not all of the jobs require.
Not all of them, but some of them, right?
Two of her vocational, three past jobs.
The vocational expert is supposed to confine his testimony to the jobs that she can perform, right?
Yes. One of the jobs, two of the jobs of her past jobs were considered to be light work, and one of them was sedentary work, her most recent electronics assembler, which I believe requires primarily sitting and some walking and standing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Cohen. Mr. Duncan, time.
Thank you. With regard to the treating physician rule, Your Honors, one of the problems that I think, and I've noted that we're reviewing again last night on Westlaw, I believe there's something like 12 cases on the treating physician rule that this court has either decided in a published or unpublished opinion in 2010. Part of the problem, I think, judges, is that there's a disconnect between the policy of the commissioner and what the ALJs are doing. In this particular case, they're directed to give controlling weight to a treating physician report, and if not, to apply checklist factors to determine the great weight or significant weight that is to be applied, if any. And what ends up happening is ALJs are going at hearings and determining that this is just one more piece of evidence, no different than an examination of the medical record by a non-examining source or, for that matter, lay testimony, which is one of the reasons why these cases, I believe, keep coming before this court. As you asked, Judge, Dr. Carlson's opinion is consistent, and the Bauer decision talks about the fact that there has to be some sign that there's inconsistency. It's not, there's a serious flaw, and there is no serious flaw. Even the state agency physicians say that she has these problems with her knees, that she's limited. It's a matter of degree. Nobody is disputing, but the only one who had real treatment history, had her entire medical record, and actually did a full examination is a treating source, Dr. Craig, who reached this opinion. Lastly, I'd point out that the credibility factors, the watching children or grandchildren, being able to care for your personal care needs, the commissioner seems to have a standard that you need in order to be on disability completely in a vegetative state, or at least stuck in bed, and that's not the case. And being able to watch your grandchildren is no different than if the ALJ said, I find her uncredible because she's able to watch Oprah, manipulate the remote, and watch out the window. It means nothing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel.